Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
That background really helps me be able to read people and know how hard can I push and when are they kind of hitting that breaking point? When do I need to back off? When do I need to tell another kid back off? So-and-so has got something going on. Also, I think communication. It allows me to communicate at a deeper level than just kind of the baseline, do the thing.
And our guest this week, Zoe Siswick. She is the AD and coaches softball and girls soccer at Science Leadership Academy in Philadelphia. And Zoe, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Now, in addition to the athletic stuff, which is you're also a counselor at the school, right? Is there anything else on the resume we should be aware of?
So I am in Philadelphia. Anytime you're an athletic director or coach, you kind of have your full-time job. And so my quote-unquote full-time job at SLA is school counselor, which I've been there since 2009. And I've been coaching softball, girls softball, since 2009, since I started. And I've been coaching girls soccer since 2014. I've been athletic director since 2019. So I started right before the pandemic, which was awesome. And I actually, as of July 1st, I'm going to be the softball sport chair for the Philadelphia Public League. So I'm actually going to no longer be coaching because you're not allowed to be in that position and also coach. So I'm going to be, in essence, the commissioner of softball for the Philadelphia Public League.
Won't be coaching soccer anymore?
Correct.
Okay, so all that's off the table now.
Yeah.
Was this something you pursued, or was this something that kind of came to you and you were like, oh, that sounds interesting?
I pursued it. So every sport has a sport chair, and that person is kind of in charge of scheduling and all the administrata surrounding that sport. And so those positions only open up when someone leaves or retires. And if it opens up and you're interested, you kind of have to jump while you can. I wasn't quite ready to give up coaching yet, but otherwise the next person would have taken it and I would have had to wait until they retired. So I'm looking forward to it.
Think it's going to be tough to not coach anymore, or were you kind of at
Absolutely.
A point?
Yeah, both. So I at SLA, we have it with an advisory program. And so you're matched with, it's kind of a much more robust homeroom. So you're matched with a group of about 20 kids their freshman year, and you go through with them as their advisor for 4 years. And I actually coach a lot of my advisees. And so at our last softball game this year, I said, hey, you know, I'm not going to be coaching next year. And I have, on soccer in particular, but on softball as well, a couple of my advisees, and they were like, wait, what? You can't just do this to me. So if I fully was able to make that decision, I would have gone at least one more year, but it will free up my schedule to be able to spend some more time with my daughter and her athletic endeavors after school. I've actually been coaching her soccer and softball teams as well.
Do you know what this new duty will entail? Is there is going to be a little bit of learning on the fly? Like, you understand in broad strokes, but from the micro sense, is this going to be a learning experience for you?
A lot of learning on the fly. And there are other folks in that same position. You know, there's sports chair for baseball, for girls soccer, for boys basketball, et cetera. But there's only one for softball. So while I can have feedback and advice and guidance from other folks, I can't say, hey, co-chair, what do you think about this? I'm really just the one making those decisions and figuring it out as I go along.
Give me an example of the types of decisions, or is that part of the learning thing?
Both. I know that there are, for example, the athletic directors this year voted on a bylaw such that schools who forfeit in the public league or District 12 or PAAA playoffs will lose their opportunity to participate in the playoffs in the following year. So I would have to figure out, did anyone forfeit this year? Would I have to figure out, was the reason they forfeited sufficient such that they wouldn't actually be penalized, or would they be penalized, and figure all that out kind of on my own. And also just figuring out the intricacies of who are the umpires who are my best umpires, who are the umpires who only want to work in South Philly, who are the folks who I can't put them behind the plate. I have to only put them in the field and things like that.
So tell me a little bit about Science Leadership Academy.
Sure. So SLA was founded, we just had our 15th graduating class last night, and it is a project-based school, small. We have 500 students. It was founded with a partnership with the Franklin Institute. We no longer have a partnership, but also was at a time one of the only one-to-one laptop schools. COVID changed all of that. Now every school is pretty much a one-to-one laptop school, but we do really focus on presentation, on collaboration, on inquiry, and we're kind of a unique little school, and I love it there. I did my counseling internship there, and that's the only place I've ever worked as a school counselor.
Given the type of school it is, how big a footprint does athletics have?
So I kind of look at us as the little school that could. We are, for example, in my final year as softball coach, we actually made it to the public league championship playing Central. We lost, sadly, but Central is one of the biggest schools in the city who has the largest pool of students and athletes to choose from. And so for us, a lot of times I have a big range of players. So I had students who play travel softball, and I have students who are kind of athletic and wanted to try out softball. And that group of kids was able to make it to the public league championships. We've had championships in recent years in boys swimming and girls swimming. Championships are, quite honestly, not as common as they are in some of the other bigger schools, but our students have been really successful. And I think part of the reason is that we have a really great group of committed coaches, first and foremost, but we also have the backing of our principal. And a principal and the support of a principal can really make or break the success of an athletics program at our school, or at any school. And so our principal, actually, he has an athletics background himself. He was a girls' varsity basketball coach when he was a teacher for many years in New York City. And he also is very actively involved in Ultimate Frisbee. And so he actually coaches. It's not a school district sport, but he coaches our boys varsity Ultimate Frisbee team at SLA.
Now, you talk about having, you know, kids on a wide range of the spectrum as far as experience, and I would imagine probably talent level as well. How challenging is that as a coach to patch that quilt together with all these different types of pieces? Or is that part of what really makes it fun?
It's really, really hard. I think sometimes there are years, and I think if you look at a sport like softball, it's more challenging than it is in a sport like soccer, both of which are the sports that I coached. Because in softball, number one, there are years that I might have a pitcher who plays travel ball, who gets private pitching lessons. And honestly, she's going to get better outside instruction in very specific intricacies of pitching than I would ever be able to give her. And I own that, and I'm fine with that. And so it's, how can I use those kids and still give them, what can they get out of practice, but also how can they take their skills and help the students, the players who don't know as much and don't have the skill set. And we are going from those kids who are like not knowing that, who are super fast and athletic, and I can teach them pretty quickly how to hit a ball, and so they get on base, but then they forget that they're supposed to tag up when there's a pop-up. You know, so having that range of skill level. And in the public league, you don't have assistant coaches. The only time you have an assistant coach is if you have sufficient numbers to have a JV program. And so nine times out of 10 at our school, for example, we only have a few teams, girls and boys basketball, girls volleyball, and boys soccer that have numbers to have a JV program. So you're out there by yourself. I practice softball at 6:45 in the morning, and I'm out there by myself trying to, you know, show a girl how to put your hand all the way back when you're throwing a ball. And then there's a girl who has her 20-minute warm-up for pitching because she has her routine that she's done since she was pitching at 10 years old. And combining all of those things, and then I think also, especially in a sport like softball, the positions are so very different. I'm not, you know, I really want to have some outfield practice. And so what am I going to do with the infielders when I'm doing that? And so I sometimes have to use them in a utility role. All right, infielders, now you are throwing pop-ups to the outfielders. And how can I kind of incorporate them into the drill as well?
Given all that, from a coaching standpoint, how much do you feel like you are driven by the pursuit of winning? And how much are you driven by the pursuit of having the kids get better? Everybody wants to win. Like, I'm not trying to be kumbaya, but, you know, do you kind of look at it as a push-pull? Like, you know, today the most important thing is for this player to learn this more than we've got to find a way to win this game.
So my actual, in terms of coaching philosophy, my number one priority is for them to have fun and to really develop a love for the sport. And I say to my girls every year, and it's funny, there's some girls who I've coached in two sports for all 4 years, and they're like, okay, I could give a speech myself. And I talk to them at the beginning of every season how I do this because I loved sports growing up, and I loved being a part of a team, and I loved representing my school or my outside team. And if they find themselves stop loving it, something's wrong. And so, you know, finding a reason for them to enjoy being together. Even when we, for example, when we, and not to keep bringing up my loss, but when we lost the championship game at the end of the season, you know, I said to the girls, first of all, we're playing with house money. You're playing a school with however many, 3,000 kids, your school, 500 kids. No one's expecting us to win. So if we lose, cool. That's what they all expected us to do. If we win, great. We had the upset story. Wonderful. And I said, I enjoyed coaching you. We had so much fun together, and we worked hard, and we, you know, we really locked in when we needed to, but we enjoyed being together. And I think that's the thing that the girls are going to take away from. Like, I mean, they were upset that we lost the championship game because you want to win, but they were like, wow, we made it. And I'm looking around and we're losing, and they are still cheering for one another. They're still they have smiles on their faces. They're enjoying being out there. And so the fact that I was able to help them get there and kind of be a conduit to them, especially across grade levels, just developing friendships and wearing that jersey and representing their school, that, you know, to me, that is a win.
I know you're not going to be coaching anymore, but over the last several years, as you have juggled counselor, AD, coaching multiple sports, how did you juggle it? Was the AD job made a little easier because you were coaching two sports, so you were on the ground and understood a lot of the things? Does the counselor and the athletic director role, do they help maybe complement each other in any way? Like, how do you juggle it all?
I think yes is the short answer. What I always say to people is, I'm like, me coaching two sports is two fewer coaches I had to manage. And so it's really easy. Every time I'm sending an email, and it's really cool. Actually, a lot of my coaches coach more than one sport. So every time I'm sending an email to all of my coaches, I'm like, why am I only emailing five people or whatever it is? And I'm like, oh, well, that's because I coach two, she coaches three, she coaches two. But it really did. Transitioning to the athletic director role from having coached for, I guess at the time, it was almost 10 years by the time I started becoming AD, was pretty seamless. There were some logistical things I had to learn, administrative things I had to learn, but all of the kind of cultural components of being involved in athletics on the school district was fine. I definitely, as I said, much easier to manage myself than two additional coaches, because the weird thing about the way we do things in Philadelphia is you are not, in a lot of other districts, the AD is an administrator. The AD sometimes is an assistant principal, but they're definitely in an admin role. And for me, I'm managing my friends. And so it's a little bit strange sometimes when, you know, when my friend is trying to let a kid practice or try out whose physical isn't up to date or something, and I have to kind of lay into them, it gets tricky. And so managing myself becomes a little bit easier there. But it definitely is, as a counselor, I'm in an administrative role in my building, and I'm part of the leadership team. So in that way, that kind of marries nicely with being AD, because I do work very closely with my principal, assistant principal, and other folks in making kind of executive decisions for the better of our school and in thinking through big picture stuff that we need to consider. And so being able to kind of be someone who's not a teacher sitting in a classroom doing that is helpful. And also, honestly, the flexibility of the hours. Like, when I obviously have a counseling emergency, I have to kind of drop everything and do it. But the difference of being a teacher in the middle of teaching my Algebra 1 class and I'm checking weather.com to see if there's going to be a thunderstorm and I need to call these officials and cancel the game and cancel the bus before 12 o'clock or you'll get in trouble because you didn't cancel the bus soon enough, I do have the flexibility to be able to do that. And then I think transitioning to another piece of it, though, is sometimes somewhere where I've seen being counselor and more so counselor and coach has sometimes been at odds is if I'm having a kid who I know is dealing with something and then I'm trying to put on my coach hat and then they like don't go to practice or don't perform or don't do this. And I kind of have to balance being like, well, as counselor, I know what's going on here, but there are also certain things I'm expecting from them as coach. And I've had to kind of figure out how to balance those two things within my brain, because you really do have to, like, to some extent almost turn off one to activate the other.
That was kind of my next question, because I know you got your master's in, what, counseling psychology? Mm-hmm. And I would think overall that having that background is incredibly helpful when it comes to coaching, just because it just gives you such a deep toolbox of empathy and understanding to where, as you say, you know, the coach like, well, I need you to do this, but you kind of understand and maybe can work problems in different ways or work situations that if you just had that straight coaching background, you might, you know, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, where you just, nope, sorry, run a lap. Like, right. A little tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, it does just gives you a different type of approach, or can give you tools to have a different type of approach.
Oh, yeah. I quite honestly, I'm probably way less of a hard ass than a lot of the other coaches I know. And I do, it does help me, that background really helps me be able to read people and know how hard can I push and when are they kind of hitting that breaking point? When do I need to back off? When do I need to tell another kid back off? So-and-so's got something going on, or I can see that their levels are rising up and up and up. And so it does allow me to also, I think, communication as well. It allows me to communicate at a deeper level than just kind of the baseline, do the thing.
So let's dig a little bit into your background. Like, what was your introduction to sports as a kid?
Sports were a lot different when I was a kid. So I played really soccer and softball. I played for most of my youth. Obviously, I dabbled with a few other things here and there. But in terms of travel and playing for school, I played soccer and softball my entire life. I did play soccer in high school. When I went to Central, actually, and when I was in high school, girls soccer was a spring sport. So I had to pick whether I wanted to play soccer or softball for school, although I was playing both of them outside of school still. And so I picked soccer. And then I actually in high school also got into rowing, and I rowed for a few years outside of school. My senior year, I actually rowed with another girl I went to school with. We rowed under Central's name in some of the high school races. And then I ended up rowing in college for 2 years.
What was it about rowing that captured you?
It was just something different to try. It's the hardest thing I've ever done and ever will do physically. And it really is. There's a mental component to the sport. And there is, in Philadelphia in particular, there's a rowing community that it's not just, you don't just go to practice and leave. You're really just fully immersed in it.
You went to GW?
I went to GW.
For college, and yep. You said you rode there. Mm-hmm. Did you go to GW? Was it the education driving you, or was it the opportunity to row at the collegiate level?
So I always tell my students, don't pick a school for one reason, because that, you know, don't pick a school just for sports, because what happens if you tear your ACL and your career's over and that's it? I definitely wanted to go to school in the city, and I definitely wanted to row. And I did have the opportunity to row at GW. It was a Division I school. But I was very, I thought at the time. I was very interested in international affairs. I took Italian in high school, and I really loved it. And I kind of thought that that would launch a – I thought it had launched an interest in international relations. And so GW kind of checked all of those boxes. It also seemed, on paper at least, and very diverse, which was something that was important to me growing up in Philadelphia, going to Central, which is a very diverse school. College in general is not very diverse, and it was important to me to have as much of that experience as possible when I was in college.
And the soccer playing, was that, did you ever have dreams of playing that at another level, or was it you had maxed out from what was possible?
You know, I think I discovered rowing, and rowing was like this
just blew
cool
the other thing out of the water.
Thing.
No yeah. pun intended.
Yeah, 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 literally. it was a new thing, and it was a thing I think rowing even now is still a lot more accessible to, I was going to say play, to participate in even on a Division I level. And probably I could have played Division III soccer. I never would have been able to access a D1 program anywhere near. But I think it was just one of those things where it was new and it was exciting and I was able to be successful at it. And I just got fully immersed in the community.
Why only rowing for 2 years? Was it life got in the way or what happened?
Well, I think if you ask me now, it's a different answer than if you asked me then. It was probably because I had a boyfriend back home and back here in Philadelphia, and I just wanted the opportunity to go more back and forth. But the other thing, too, is it really became, part of the reason I fell in love with it is it was all-encompassing. And then part of the reason I felt like I wanted to move away from it a little bit is it was all-encompassing. I ate, slept, and dreamt rowing. You know, you wake up in the morning, you go to practice, then, or lifting, then you go to your classes, and then you go to your second practice of the day or lift. I was having dreams about rowing. We were going to parties with all rowers. It was my entire life. And it was a little bit too much for me. And I remember I went to my coach and I tried to quit, and I secretly wanted him to try to convince me not to quit, and he didn't. And then I was like, oh, I guess I just quit. And then it did feel like a burden was lifted off of me because it was so much in terms of occupying every bit of my time, my energy, physical and mental energy. And so for the second half of college, I was kind of able to explore a lot more opportunities.
Did you miss it? Or it sounds like once it was gone, you were like, that was fun, but I'm good.
I missed it, but not enough to want to go back.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Zoe Siswick in just a moment. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda, KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Zoe Siswick, school counselor and athletic director at Science Leadership Academy in Philadelphia.
One of the first things when I wanted to invite you in for this conversation, I was fascinated. You don't come across many people at the level you are athletically that have a degree in international relations. And it's fascinating listening to you talk about your GW. I almost get a feeling of a, oh God, I can't believe that was the road I was traveling. Is that fair? Or what,
yeah.
You know, what kind of what happened that pivoted you from international relations to more of the counseling, teaching, coaching lane?
Yeah, absolutely. So I thought about transferring. And I applied to Penn as a transfer. And for the second time, Penn didn't admit me. So apparently I don't have very good luck with applying to Penn. But I kind of just stuck. This is kind of silly to say now, but I stuck with my major because it was going okay for me. It was good enough. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And in my major, I didn't have to take a lab science. And by the time I'm a junior, I'm like, I'm good. I don't want to take a lab science. I'm just going to kind of coast. I think it took me a while to grow up. And I was ready to, I applied to take the civil service exam, or the, I'm sorry, the foreign service exam. I had my study book. I was supposed to take it the next day. And I realized I don't want to go live in some random country and stamp passports for 2 years before I figure out what's next. I want to be here. I did return back to Philadelphia after graduation. And I became involved in a lot of really progressive clubs and organizations. And I realized that a lot of the things I was interested in, I could impact as a teacher. And right out of college, I went into an alternate teaching program, and I hated it. I taught second grade for 2 years, and I thought I hated children. It was, and I realized looking back, I really just didn't have the support. The program didn't have the support. The school didn't have the support. I was basically set up to fail in that position. So I left after 2 years and was working for an educational nonprofit, and I realized, no, I actually like kids. I just didn't like being a teacher. And how can I be still work in a school building outside of the classroom? And I think something that I noticed when I went into my counseling program is a lot of people went into counseling because they're interested in therapy. I went into counseling because I was interested in education and kids. So I went to Temple for my graduate program in counseling psychology. And then the first year I was at Temple, I was a graduate assistant in the athletics department. And so that really opened my eyes to the world of athletics outside of just kind of my personal experience playing. And I think I coached youth soccer a little bit in my early 20s just for fun. But that really opened my eyes to kind of the internal organization of all of it. And I fell in love with it. And but then I was on track to become a counselor. I interned, actually, my counseling internship I did, which is like student teaching, at my current school. And then I took a class in urban education as an elective, fell in love with it, and applied to Temple's doctoral program in urban education. I said, well, if I get the counseling job at SLA, I'll take that. If I get the spot in the PhD program, I'll take that. Or I guess it was EDD program. Well, I got both of them. And I'm like, well, shoot, what am I going to do now? So I thought it would be a great idea to start a PhD program and start a new job all at the same time and coach softball. So I realized about halfway through the year that I didn't love the PhD program, and it wasn't college. I didn't have to do it. And so I realized that I was really loving my work at SLA, and I decided to take a pause on the PhD program, and that was in 2010. And I haven't looked back, and I've really appreciated that I was able to take this path to be able to work with high schoolers in Philadelphia, and it's just been, it's been a perfect fit.
I mentioned earlier how like the counseling kind of helping to complement coaching and athletic director. I'm curious, does the background in international relations, are there any benefits to that that might give you tools in your toolbox that other people don't have? Is there any role where you lean on that and it maybe puts you ahead because you have that background? Or is it kind of a separate, complete, you know, set of skills that don't really translate?
I think that most of my study in international relations was kind of on like in international business and law and economics and things like that. I think that more of my international experience that's been helpful has been through counseling. My counseling program, in thinking about counseling diverse populations, and obviously just my experience living and growing up and going to school in Philadelphia as well, has allowed me to be able to engage with a broad range, a diverse range of student populations. And my school is a very diverse school. And so I don't think that necessarily that specific, you know, the coursework I was taking there has to a great extent impacted my work as a counselor. But the other piece of it is it has impacted me as I kind of my career, I think, has took like a huge, like a sharp turn, and it has nothing to do with what I went to college for the most part. And so that has helped me, even though I don't do college counseling. We have another college counselor at the school. I will still talk with kids about college and about future plans. When I kind of think about my experience and my choices and my decisions, I feel like so often kids are 17 years old, feel like they have to decide what they want to do with the rest of their lives. Like, I didn't become a school counselor until I was, I think it was 28 or 29 years old. And so there were a lot of things I did, and I got a very expensive degree that has nothing to do with school counseling. And so talking to students about, like, it's okay. You don't need to decide now what you want to do with the rest of your life. And you should think about, these should be all the reasons that you make the decisions. And also, you should know what you don't want. So when they come and say, I looked at the school and I hated it, I said, that's great. Now you know what you don't want in a school, because that's just as important as figuring out what you do want.
When was the moment, if there was one, when you realized how much you loved the athletic side? Because I think at first that is something you can do, and well, but it drains a lot of time, and if I don't love it, you know. But was there an internal discussion that this is going to be a part of my life for the long haul here? Or was it more just something that you enjoyed it the one season, you did another season, and before you know it, it's five. Before you know it, hey, can you coach this? Hey, any interest in that? Like, you know, how would you kind of say it all came together?
So I remember very vividly how I became softball coach at my school. And we were sitting around in a staff meeting, and our principal or athletic director said, does anyone want to coach softball next year? And it was right. It was the year prior to me starting to work there, but I was interning there. I said, I'll coach softball. And they were like, great, hired. I was like, oh, that quickly. And then I realized I was, as I played both of them, I was much more kind of deep into the soccer community. And so I realized, like, I knew how to play softball. But that first kind of few weeks that I was out there, I was like, I have no idea how to coach softball. But I loved it. And I loved being able to do something to connect with students outside of the school building, to get to know them as athletes and as people, not just students. I loved being able to win. And I feel like sometimes when you're working in a school, you're so kind of siloed in that own school. And so being able to interact and, you know, literally travel all around and see folks from other school buildings and other students too, and see kind of what it's like. But I do think that for those 5 years that I coached softball only, I was still just kind of like doing my thing. I showed up, I coached softball, I left. And I enjoyed it and had, you know, some mixed success. Some years we did really well, other years less so. But then I think once I started coaching soccer, and now I'm coaching two sports. So that was 2014, I believe. It was kind of like, all right, you're in this. You're in this for the long run now. And everyone, I think, always thought that I would end up coaching soccer at SLA because they knew that was my main sport. And they did transition at some time. Actually, when I started at SLA, girls soccer was still a spring sport. So I couldn't have done both. But then when that teacher stepped down from coaching, everyone was kind of like, all right, this is the obvious choice. You'll go into coaching girls soccer. And I think I got really a lot more immersed in the coaching community once I was coaching two sports. I coached a lot of the same girls overlap. I got to know a lot of the folks outside. Again, a lot more folks outside the building. And then in 2019 was when, so our school used to be up the street here at 22nd and Arch, and the school district moved us to co-locate, and we share a building with Ben Franklin High School over at Broughton Spring Garden. And our former athletic director was kind of like, I'm ready to make the transition. I'm done. And he kind of, same thing as with soccer. Everyone looked at me like, Zoe, you are clearly the choice of who should be the next athletic director. It's going to be a little tricky because we also co-op almost all of our sports with Ben Franklin. And so they kind of said whoever's coming into this role is going to have to deal with the politics of the cooperative sponsorships of the sports. Whoever comes into this role is going to have to deal with the moving of everything and the transitions and maybe finding new field spaces and figuring out practices and all of that. And, you know, maybe at the time I was being real stupid. I was like, sure, I'll do it. Maybe not realizing how much work all of that would be. And I think ever since then, I've just been very fully immersed in it. And I love it. And I just, being the athletic director makes me, I mean, I love coaching two sports and getting to know all the kids, but I know every single athlete. And the kids know I come out to their games, and I'm, you know, I travel to away games sometimes when I can. And I'm a very hands-on athletic director. And it kind of does go aligns with your question earlier about being the counselor. Like, sometimes some of the kids are like, oh, you're the counselor? And I say, yes, that's actually my main goal, my main role here at SLA, because they see me as so actively involved with athletics in the school.
Now, did I see you picked up the Lindback Award this past year?
I did, yeah.
Now, that, for people that aren't familiar, that's an honor that in the Philadelphia School District goes to the top educators. That's really impressive. How did you find out about that?
So I knew that my school had nominated me. And I think what my principal tries to do is he looks at the folks who have been around for a while. And we have a very strong group of teachers, of educators at our school. And so he has tried to, over the years, kind of look and nominate folks who he thinks are doing a really great job. And so I was really honored to be nominated by my school, but being nominated by my school doesn't mean that I necessarily would still win the award. I think every school can nominate someone or more than one person, but then only 60 folks were selected. And so I'm just grateful. I mean, I know I work hard, and I know my colleagues know I work hard. I'm grateful that my colleagues, I imagine, wrote really strong letters of recommendation, and I had a student write a letter of recommendation such that the panel selected me. And I was really honored. And I'll tell you that no one was more proud than my parents were, though.
How'd you find out?
I got an email. I was standing there cooking dinner, and I picked up my phone and looked at the email, and I texted my little group chat I had with my boss and two other colleagues, and I said, I won. So that was an exciting moment.
If we go back in time and I sit down with 19-year-old Zoe.
Oh, God.
And I lay out what the rest of your life is going to look like, I can almost imagine you would have looked at me like I had, you know, come down from Jupiter and tried to kidnap you. Like, would you have been able to wrap your head around the journey you eventually ended up taking?
Well, first of all, so I have a group of, it's five of us girlfriends from high school. They still laugh when they think about the fact that I'm a school counselor. They're like, you're a school counselor? And I think part of it is because I get the kids and I don't pass judgment about things. And rather than kind of trying to be like, you shouldn't do this, you should be this way, I hear them. And look, if they're doing things or being real dumb, say this is real dumb, but I also understand that there are parts of the coming of age and of growing up that people are just going to do and people are just going to be like. And even now, sometimes I'll look at, you know, some kids and I'm like, oh my God, 19-year-old Zoe wouldn't believe that I'm saying this now, but like, why is that kid wearing that outfit? That's so inappropriate. And I can't believe I'm doing that. But yeah, absolutely. I think to some extent, people can probably see me being involved in sports more so they can see me being a school counselor. But I think the fact that my involvement in athletics has really upped in the past 5 years since I've become athletic director. And I love being a counselor. Don't get me wrong. I love it. And I love being able to connect with students outside of the classroom and on a really deep and personal level to help them when they're having hard times. I love sports. Like, I love that I get to just like, okay, I don't just sit there and watch basketball games. I'm like working the gate and make sure people aren't sitting in the front row and doing this and that. But like, I love that part of my job is I get to be at high school basketball games, or that I get to buy sweatshirts for our bowling team, or that I get to, you know, go out there and coach at these beautiful Phillies RBI fields in South Philly. Like, all of that, the fact that I'm able to be part of all of that, I think if you asked 17-year-old Zoe, who is still playing sports herself, I never would have thought that I would have been that person.
How do you feel, and I don't mean at SLA, when I ask you this question, I'm talking in general, state of youth sports. Mm-hmm. Like, given your experience, your position, the way you look at things, because I think youth sports, which eventually leads to high school, like, there's a lot of problems. And I worry what it's going to look like in 5-10 years, because in addition to problems with parents and stuff like that, we're now introducing money at such a huge level at such a young age. I'll even throw gambling in there to a point. Like, there's a lot of things in the works now. Like, are you concerned? What are you seeing? Like, what are your thoughts on where we are right now?
So the interesting thing is I'm seeing different things at the high school level than I'm seeing at actually, so I have a daughter who's going into third grade and who's involved in sports. And on the high school level, I'm seeing kids who are pulled in so many different directions that, for example, when I played soccer at Central, we were required to come practice over spring break. And that was just the thing that you had to do. And now if I tried to get my softball team to practice during spring break, they'd say, oh, I'm traveling here, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I have to work, I have to take care of my baby sister, all the things. And that's actually part of the reason that we do more. I have a love-hate relationship with morning practice, but part of the reason with softball that I enjoy morning practice is because besides sleep, you don't have much else to do at 7 o'clock in the morning. And so there's just like, there's so many things that they're doing. And I mean, I have kids coming up to me like, can I do track and softball and badminton this season? And I'm like, no, no, you can't. So that is, it's kind of like the overextension, the trying to do so many things, the... And then flip side, though, I see at on the lower end, I see the kind of like forced focus on one sport so early. So my daughter at 6 was doing a development soccer league or soccer program where they were practicing 3 days a week. And she didn't like soccer any. She's like, oh, Mom, soccer again? But they give you this sell where they're like, well, if your daughter doesn't play the development academy, then they're not going to make the travel team. And then if they don't make the travel team, they're not going to make their high school team. If they don't make their high school team, God, you know, forget even ever playing in college. And I'm sitting here with a 6-year-old like, I hope she makes her high school team. Like, what? And it's year round. Mm-hmm. So I played soccer in the fall. I played indoor soccer in the winter, but they were two different sports at the time. And then I played softball in the spring, happily. And that was all I did. I didn't think about softball. I didn't pick up a softball. I didn't pick up a glove until the next spring rolled around. And now it's, I will have kids leaving softball practice, or I'm sorry, leaving a softball game and go have soccer practice for their travel team at night. Get home at 10 o'clock at night, then have to do their homework and wake up at 6 a.m. for their softball practice the next morning. And so they're just like, there's no stopping. And it doesn't necessarily give kids the chance to explore other things. If I have a kid who at 8 years old is now so deeply immersed in soccer, when does she try field hockey? When does she try lacrosse? When does she try swimming or any of those other things? And then if you don't try it until you're 14, forget it. You're way behind the pack.
Yeah, I think one of the things to that point is more people should be alarmed that we talk about burnout in athletes at the ages of 16 and mm-hmm. 17. Like that mm-hmm. should be more than just, oh, that's a shame. That should be, mm-hmm. wait a minute, we're doing something catastrophically wrong here if mm-hmm. we're getting to this point. But yet it's incredibly common. And yeah. It's not good, but it all goes to your point because I've seen it myself, you know. Mm-hmm. 6 years old and playing in tournaments and everything. And besides the cost, you're kind of like, what are we doing here? Like, the left fielder is doing cartwheels and picking flowers. And that's fine. I'm not. Mm-hmm. Why are we so worried about this at this level? It just mm-hmm. it seems very counterproductive.
Oh, yeah. I've had multiple players who could play at the next level who have said, I kind of think I'm done. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of playing at this high level. And look, I have players who also say that and then go. I had one girl who said it and then was like, you know what, actually, I miss softball. And she walked on to her school's team and is now playing in her second year of playing Division III softball and loves it. But there's, you know, they're going so hard for so long. And I think also with a lot of sports, there's how many people are going to play professionally? And so I think when you're finishing... Your goal is kind of always like the next. And except for a rare few, there isn't really the next after college. And so when you're going into high school, I mean, when you're leaving high school and going into college, it's kind of like, well, maybe it's just college. Maybe that's just it because there's nothing after that. And I think for a lot of folks, the next becomes coaching or becoming involved in athletics in another manner.
Zoe Siswick, this was so much fun. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Zoe Siswick, counselor and athletic director at Science Leadership Academy in Philadelphia, for being our guest this week and coming in studio. Now, if you like this show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow this show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at Matt Leon 1060. Thanks so so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get emotion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved, home protected, bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at Ring.com.